Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl, and we're doing a Carl's Cavern tonight. But we're also in with Incredibly Strange Films. And, of course, along with me is my co-host, Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And she always does that. Always.
You
but
always
today,
leave it open for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, anyway, I'm very pleased to have a good friend on the podcast, someone that I think is extremely talented. As an actor, you would basically know him from Scanners, but in many, many ways, Stephen Lack is much more than that. He's a very fine artist, and we're going to be talking to him specifically tonight about his art, and I'd like to introduce Stephen Lack. Thank you so much for coming back, Stephen. Really appreciate it.
Oh, good to be here, Carl. You're a sweetheart.
Ah, yes.
He's
a player?
Oh, no, I said he's
well,
a player. You can't be a sweetheart and a player.
Oh, okay. Well, how about if I'm a church musician and play the organ? Is that okay?
Hey, anybody in a church playing an organ? Come on.
And it's not even a Catholic church either.
Oh, God.
Oh, really? There's another kind.
I'm actually working for the Christian Scientists these days, which is rather interesting. But we're talking about me. That's not why we're here.
Oh, yeah. There's a new scandal in the church.
Oh.
Well, we won't bring it up.
Oh, go ahead. Why not?
Bring it up? Well, I don't know. They decided that some priest murdered some kid 50 years ago.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, and then he just died. They probably gave him the news he was going to be indicted. That should only happen to a few other people, but no, they've lawyer up. But this guy rolled over and cacked. And, 50 years. 50 years he's been bouncing around, and the kid died at 13. The kid would be 63 now.
He'd be my age.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
I did see that today. However, we're going to change subject here because one of the reasons you're on is that you have a big announcement of a certain publication that is just being released. So why don't you tell us about that, Stephen?
Well, it's great to be doing this on radio. This is like undoing your blouse on Howard Stern. But, I have a new book out, and it's called When Are You Coming Home? And the cover picture is a trashed room with the writing in red on the wall, When Are You Coming Home? And it was put out by St. Thomas University in Fredericton, New Brunswick. And they're great. This is the second book of mine that they've put out, but it's the first book on my paintings. And I've been painting for over 50 years and exhibiting all over the world, but this is the first book, not a catalog, but the first book that's dedicated solely to my painting. So it's a monograph. And it's got an introduction by Carlo McCormick. Some of your people, he's not on any social media, but some people might know who Carlo is. You look him up, Google him. Curated some amazing shows, skateboarding art, amongst other things. But he's been around. He was like 17 when he curated his first show in the East Village at Limbo Lounge, and he's had a terrific, I won't say career, because Dylan always said when you mention career, it sounds like you're already dead. So Carlo's still in play, I'm still in play, and he's been writing and doing crit work, and his writing is amazing. He wrote the foreword to the book. And
so you guys are not dead yet?
No, we're not dead. We are not dead. Still, I like to refer to it as still alive.
There you go. Still kicking. That's the way I like it. Still kicking.
Yeah. Switching in the Petri dish.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Yeah, before they put us in an eyedropper and drop us into the ear of the next generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
Rachel's,
I mean, that's what she...
possessor. You know that Brandon Cronenberg, David's son, is lined up to have a TV series. And
yes,
I did see that. Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, do you still keep it in touch with David at all?
Well, we don't touch each other because we live very far apart, and as huge as we both are, we still can't reach. So, but we are in contact, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
a big squishy painter guy? Because, like, I just want to imagine giving you an amazing huge hug right now.
Oh, am I a big squishy painting guy?
Yeah,
that's what you said.
You know, no, I'm mildly feral for my age. And, you know, my paint is sometimes squishy. It could be formal.
Are you squishy, is what I'm asking.
Oh, no,
like,
I'm not squishy.
I'm practically
frigid, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't get any work done.
It doesn't show in your art.
What's that?
Well,
I said it doesn't show in your art at all. You are not frigid.
Oh, no, well, my art is full of longing, you know. So the abstraction is by keeping away from people.
Right. You know, one of the things that I do want to mention, I mean, I'm just looking at some of the posts on your Facebook page, and you do want to go to Stephen's Facebook page, Stephen Lack, that's with a PH, but you just posted not too long ago, or actually today, you just did 8 more paintings. Do you ever stop, or drawings, yeah, okay, they're pencil and paper. Do you ever stop? You never stop, do you?
Well, you know, you're saying never stop because we're still rolling. But, you know, there'll come a time. There will be a wall, you know.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And every day is a freaking challenge. You know, it's not easy.
No.
But I'm lucky because the people close to me have provided me with the time and the place to do the work. So,
yeah.
You know, my wife takes care of me. She feeds me and makes it so that I can work, and she does a huge shitload of work to keep everything, you know, going. We've got our grandkids with us, and, you know, COVID and homeschooling and remote learning and all of that stuff. It's been a wild year.
Oh, my God,
but, you know,
the
work that I do is very internal. I am an everyman. I think that's the validity of the work, is that, you know, if I have a thought and I put it on paper, it's not so personal that you, a stranger, won't get it. It'll resonate with you, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's my job.
Yeah. And of course, you know, you work in many different, like watercolors and sketches and so on and so forth. But you've been doing this for a number of years. You said over 50 years. This has been a passion for you. How did you begin or really realizing that you were an artist and you loved doing it? I mean, how did that all start for you, Steve?
Well, you know, I didn't know it had started until I stopped it. So I was angry at my parents when I was about 5 or 6. I don't know why, but they had always liked my drawings. So I decided not to draw for like 5 months, or at least it seemed like 5 months. I have no idea. No one documented it. No one even knew. But when I went back to drawing, I felt like I had lost the magic, and I worked my ass off to catch up to the way I was at 5 before I stopped. So that was kind of interesting. So I guess I've always been drawing, you know, since day one. And I'm probably a little bit on the spectrum. So my interpretation of the external world isn't always as accurate, not inaccurate, but it might be a little pigeonholed, and so I don't see a lot of the stuff around what I'm focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing the artwork, I really learn about what is outside of me, you know? So it's a learning process as well.
Well, it shows through a lot in your paintings that it's not that you're not paying attention to, you know, everything that's around you. You're paying attention to what's important to the narrative of your picture.
Yeah.
I noticed that. I mean, your work is very minimalistic, but so striking. And it is absolutely clear exactly what you're showing people, like, as in, you know, this is a person, this is a really gorgeous vintage car, but it's open to a lot of interpretation, I think, because I see a lot of belonging. I was talking to Carl about that. Actually, watercolor is my medium, so I really appreciated a lot of your landscapes that you do in watercolor, because it seems actually like you do your larger scale pieces in more vibrant color and more of a...
Yeah, that could be. That could be. You know, you can do the really dark stuff small. That way you're not imposing it on people and there isn't a decorative element and you don't want to horrify people, but you do want to connect with them. So I can't just do pretty. I do pretty. I mean, I do have to take a vacation from the darkness or I would die, you know, and I've, you know, met people for a minute like Sterling Moss and stuff like that, you know, race car drivers. And I thought to myself, my God, what is it like to wake up in the morning and know you have to drive at 150 miles a day for your work? I mean, 150 miles an hour. And, I mean, I love to drive fast, but I also like to take my foot off the gas, coast, and look out the side windows as well, and not always be worried about, you know, who I'm going to run over or, you know, getting around the turn, etc. So it's the same thing with painting. You got to get up and do it, but you don't want to always be harsh. At the same time, you don't want to let anyone off the hook.
Well,
exactly.
One of the things, you know, you're talking about your you know, the harshness. I'm taking a look at one of the sketches you just did. You have a real sense of humor. Granted, it might be a dark sense of humor, but it balances it out, because I'm looking at this thing right now, Invasion of the Giant Bunnies. And it's this giant bunny. You can see that it has a person in his mouth. But it looks like almost like the Simpsons, you know, with those
like
eyes and
like
so on and so forth. Well, I'm thinking of like, you know, something Matt Groening would get of the Simpsons. I mean, I'm just looking at the eyes and that. But the point is, it doesn't matter what I think of or the influences. It's that just the way that it's presented, you can kind of get a chuckle of it. And, of course, I think of Night of the Lepus, which is a really bad horror movie from the 60s with giant bunnies.
Absolutely.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
But you have a real sense of humor involved in your pencil sketches. And even if they're satirical, and of course you have that whole series on Skullface, which is your reaction to Trump, I mean, there's still a real sense of granted a darkness, but still a playfulness to it too.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I know he was politically incorrect, but I certainly loved Al Capp. And of the eight drawings that I posted today, I think my favorite one is the woman looking at the viewer saying, "I've been here a long time."
Yes, I just turned to that one.
Yeah, that's my favorite, because I know who she is, and I know she's lurking, and I know I'm her, and it's like depression down the corridor, and yet it's just a few lines that says it all, and everybody knows her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody has gotten up in the middle of the night with the oversized raincoat just to get a glass of water. I mean, yeah, it's a treadmill.
I mean, who doesn't get a glass of water in an oversized raincoat?
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and
mine has
and
flowers on it.
That
now
work.
You understand why
now you bring it in color. These are all black and white.
Yeah. Is it just,
but also,
just
you know, being involved in film and dealing with a crew of, you know, 30, 40 people, the big budget and the deadline, and the goal is to tell a story. And the story is, you know, going to go out to maybe 20 million people by the time it's run its course. And that's a wonderful thing, and it's a real concentration, a distillation of energy, and it takes years of work writing the script and all of that. And then I could just be in bed with my head propped up on my elbow and bang out three or four scenarios on a page, and that's it. And after 20 days, even though it's not linear, I've got enough to give you memories of what you might have seen on TV for an hour.
Yeah.
No,
absolutely.
And I haven't had to deal
with
anybody.
Mm-hmm. And you do it yourself. I mean, it's the same thing as being a writer. I've talked to writers. We have Joe Lansdale coming in at the end of the week, and he says the same thing. It's his... Yeah, you know, it's his viewpoint, it's your viewpoint, and you're in control of it, nobody else is, and it's up to you to put it out there.
And you just chuckle and hope it doesn't get thrown out before you're dead or after you're dead, and that it'll be disseminated. And that is
right, exactly. You know, and of course, you know, I have to say that that's one good thing about Facebook. Because if I, you know, I mean, I get on your page at least once a week to see what you've posted and what new stuff. And this is a great way to follow an artist that you like. And I would recommend it to all our listeners to do that. You know, to Stephen or any of your artists. I have another friend of mine who's P.B. Galena, and she does early Lewis Wayne things of cats and another gentleman who, Doug Blanchard, who LGBTQ representations of religious figures and such. Very interesting artist out there. And I recommend everyone to find an artist and follow them. And, of course, I'm going to mention we have Stephen on the show right now, so go take a look at his Facebook page and his art page.
His art page, for anybody who's interested, it is glorious. You can go to StephenLackArt.com, and that is StephenLackArt.com, and you can just peruse through this, like, whole menagerie of glorious pieces, not just paintings. I think you mostly do watercolor is what it looks like, but...
No, they're all oil painting, actually.
They're all oil.
I was told that it might be watercolor, because that's my thing, but it felt like maybe you were doing pastels. I was just about to ask you that, is, like, a lot of these feel they're pastels.
I do a lot of pastels. There's a lot of soft pastel in there, and there's a lot of oil sticks. You know, my hero in art is Ray Charles, and he was a great vocalist, and he could pick up a saxophone, and he could do the piano. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're part of a band, it's a symphony, and you've got to be skilled at all the instruments if you're going to be a composer.
Okay, Stephen, you're fading in and out a little bit, just so you know.
Oh, yeah, I saw a weird bird out my window, so I moved off of my sweet spot. Okay, I'm back. How's that? Is that better?
Are you going to paint us a weird bird?
Yeah, I don't know. It must have been the sunset because it looked like the top half of it was yellow. But I went to look, and I didn't see anything that looked like my hallucination. I really get my money's worth out of just being there.
Well, you know, you're a visual artist, so you see something, and it intrigues you, and then you want to express that.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. You know, so that's, you know, and of course, that also goes to people. Go ahead, Rach, go ahead.
No, I totally get it, because I will completely zone out and be fascinated by some random thing I saw in the yard, and people are talking to me, and I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, but, uh-huh, yeah. But there was this really cool bird or flower over here. And it doesn't look like
exactly.
It look like, but, yes, it's artist ADD, man. You gotta go where the inspiration takes you, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you got to try and pay attention, but it never works. You know? Well, I got through school without flunking any exams. That was an effort. I was proud of that.
You went to McGill, right?
Didn't you go to
McGill?
Yeah. You know McGill?
I was at the campus once. I used to live 80 miles south of Buffalo, and we'd go up through the Peace Bridge and up to Toronto every so often.
Yeah, so I
had
Montreal.
To McGill. Yeah. Okay, McGill is Montreal, but no, I don't know.
Yeah, Montreal is fabulous. I mean, it used to be. I have no idea. I haven't been back there. I haven't been to New York City in a year. You know, I think we're all being put on ice. I think the science fiction film has finally landed. I think they're just deciding how to carve us up. They've made us go dormant. It was a test. We went into the sheds like they had hoped we would, and they'll come up with a new scare when they've decided who's going to get what sheds and eat what's inside.
Yeah. It's interesting in terms of how we cope with what's happened with COVID and so on and so forth. I mean, I've been working really hard on the podcast because it's the one thing I can do. And we all, the one thing that I say is that art, if anyone doesn't think art means something, what got you through, you know, this period of time, the quarantine? Movies you were watching, TV, you know, all these things that are all, you know, connected to art. And art's so important because it's the one thing that we have that fuels our imagination, fuels what get us through the tough times. And anyone that does anything like that.
Well, what's going to be when most of our experience is secondary and tertiary. In other words, instead of going out and taking a walk, you've only watched people on television taking a walk.
Right.
Okay? I think of the kids today that have watched more people have sex than they're ever going to have. You know? you think of all the... I mean, they don't even talk to each other.
Yeah.
I know my grandson, we're driving somewhere, and he says, oh, look at how close that building is to the Y. He said, you know, I've never seen it before. I said, you've never seen it before? You've never looked up from your device when we drove past it a million times.
Right.
You know, so we're dealing with a very strange and changing world, and even though we're only glancing at the subject of scanners having its 40th anniversary. But one of the great things about Cronenberg that he turned me on to, which, wasn't a surprise or anything, but he pointed out that as a species, we're mutating. And we are. We are really changing. and our experiences are changing, and that's going to make our morphology and our environment and everything else change. So nothing is standing still, and I don't know whether it's getting better or not, but yeah, we are changing. Sometimes I think we've been living through one of the peak moments, the post-World War II existence and the manipulation of the material world and the progress and the incremental acceleration, the exponential acceleration of progress during that time was really special. But one of the things that COVID is showing us is that a lot of it was unnecessary. All of a sudden, you looked up at the skies and there were no jet trails. You didn't feel any different about it. Who cared whether you could fly down to Miami to get warm or, you know, go visit somebody for a party in Seattle and then take a plane back and drop $500-$600. So you didn't have the income and you didn't have the necessity. So you didn't do it. So we all wanted to slow down. That's part of the happiness element of the COVID experience. But whether that's going to last or whether people are going to get restless, we'll find out. Get ready, World War III.
You know, I mean, with what you just said, I keep thinking of one of my favorite films, and the title is Things Change. And no matter how small they are, things change every day, and you have to notice it. You have to be aware.
Yeah.
You know, and many people are not. Many people think it's the same thing every day. And you have to be appreciative of what you have and hopefully bring that to other people in your circle and that sort of thing. But things do change, and you're absolutely right. Because there are so many things that we really don't need, but the one thing that we do need, and I think everybody's finally figured out, is interaction. I think maybe this
Definitely might shape the human connection.
Absolutely, because just like with your grandson, maybe, you know, this will shake it up enough that he starts to notice things around him as opposed through the phone.
One can only hope. Let me tell you. Interactions have been greatly reduced among the school-going population.
Yes.
Hugely reduced.
And it has been ridiculous. I actually have two children, one of which is school-aged, and the only thing that changed for me, really, during COVID, because I'm basically a stay-at-home mom, was that one of my kids was home all day. So not a lot has changed for me particularly, and I feel very blessed by that because I've been able to show people in my life what you can do when you don't have all of these distractions. And, you know, I have a massive art and craft and sewing room, and people throughout COVID, obviously safely, have come over just to utilize what I've got in my room. They're like, you know, I've been wanting to do this thing for years, but I've never done it. Do you have, like, these kind of paints and maybe a canvas? And I'm like, yeah, go for it. Just do your thing. You need to sleep on the couch? Go ahead.
Well, now that's a beautiful thing. That's beautiful.
Absolutely.
And I'm noticing an uptick in people wanting to learn how to do things, because it used to be, oh, you sew? Well, can you fix these pants for me? And now it's like, oh, you sew? Do you teach classes? Can I learn how to sew? I'm like, yeah. Love that.
Yeah, well, it shows how out of touch we are from the old craft, when every mother taught every daughter how to sew.
I'm a fifth-generation seamstress. I run a small sewing business with my mom, and it's been insane because I've been doing this for my entire life, and I've never had somebody, especially not more than one person, stop and ask me if I could teach them how to do it. They were more willing to just, you know, give me $20 to hem their pants or something, and now they want to know how to do it. And,
yeah,
and
you make more money teaching them.
Yeah, and I find it refreshing, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife used to make the clothes for one of the kids way back in the day. Yeah, she would make them special outfits. I remember a green Dalai Lama coat that she made for him for winter.
Okay, we're
yeah,
losing you again, Stephen. So there you go, you're back.
Oh, I'm here. Nope. Yeah, I haven't moved.
Yeah, I
yeah.
know. We're just, you keep fading in and out, so.
Well, I don't know if my
well,
phone battery is good. I mean, I have another line that buzzes just as much, you know, and my
yeah,
cell phone
yeah,
doesn't
right
get
there
work
you're
here.
Fine. We can hear you there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, well, you know. I heard what you were saying, Stephen. So
I
really appreciate that. I know it's for people my age, I got made fun of a lot because my mom and I made clothes for me when I was younger. And now that I'm an adult and I have much more skill behind me, I make my own clothes. I make, when my kids ask for certain things, I will make them for them. And I know a lot
but
of
meanwhile,
people
while you're saying all this,
this,
I'm imagining the world's worst horror film.
Ooh.
I'm imagining your arts and crafts room. And you've got a couple of bottles of stuff that has fumes in it. And when the neighbor lady comes over that disrespected you earlier or something like that, and you give her one of those
yeah,
bottles
to
open up and it makes her pass out, and then you do arsenic on old lace.
Yeah,
he's
just got a whole series of paintings for you. Right there.
That's not paintings.
Cool.
That would be a script. You know?
That's definitely a script. You might need to get with me after the show because I also do a little bit of writing.
Oh, you could just take
awesome.
That, would you? Just laminate the, you know, the touchstones of arsenic and old lace, and you throw in a couple of nasty neighbors, and a situation like COVID where people are turning around and trying their hardest to be nice and sweet, and but they've pissed you off in the past. You don't buy there. Hi, I'm really into the ecology, and I think it's a shame the way they're abusing all those seamstresses in Guatemala. And I think it's time we repatriated sewing to America, don't you? I think so, too. Here, try this. It's a beautiful dye. It's made out of a plant called Datura.
Okay, so it's weird that you bring all of that up because you basically just described a situation with one of my neighbors.
There you go.
We're
you know,
very
right
kind
you know.
On the surface. Yeah, yeah. So I'm like really feeling this in my soul right now.
Yeah.
Well, good. Glad I could bring something.
So I am going to change the subject a little bit, just a hair here. One of the things that I did want to ask you, and seeing all your paintings, you have a focus and a love of cars, and particularly vintage cars. And
right.
and I wanted just to have you expound on that a little bit, where you found your love of cars and so on and so forth, and by any chance did David Cronenberg have anything to do with it? Because we all know that he's a gearhead. But
well,
yeah, I just
actually,
know.
You bring it up. David and I met at the Monaco Grand Prix, which I think was last weekend. So, you know, we're within 5 days of, like, an anniversary. We met. I brought a film to Cannes, and he was there doing his thing, getting money together for his projects. So that's where we met, but my love of cars goes way back when I was, again, a kid, like really young. So if you brought a cardboard box into the house, I was in the box turning it into a car, you know, and making noises and driving it around the carpet with my hopping motions. So, you know, I've always been kind of obsessed with the idea of cars. And they're an equalizer. So if you're an awkward person at 13 and at 16, you are given a car by your parents, you're now equal to everybody that was a prick to you before. Not that, you know, that's what I did, but it was a bit of an equalizer. Another thing about cars is they represent our social optimism. You know, I just watched that great film, Salesman, by the Maisley.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Maisley. Just a great film.
The Maisley, whatever. And, and they were driving around in a Falcon convertible or a Comet convertible and a Impala convertible in the 70s. And, I mean, those cars were so heroic, even the low-budget ones. You know, they were like a combination spaceship and living room on wheels capable of going, you know, 120 miles an hour if they had to. But, you know, they could fall apart at a much lower speed. They were never very well built. But the point is that the idea of, you know, 5,000, 6,000 pounds of metal and machinery and paint could be yours for the price of like one-fifth of your annual income. I mean, this was amazing, you know, and that it could take you anywhere on the continent and you were as good as anybody anywhere. You know, the Shah of Iran could only drive one car at a time, you know, so it was, again, a huge equalizer. It was optimism. It was a finger into the future. We were manipulated to desire them like nobody's business. They were wonderful. And not only that, they made the landscape much more interesting. You want to look at a bush and a tree? Sure, that's okay. But throw a car in front of it with the fins sticking out, and the tires squat, and the predatory aspect of it, all dressed up like some Southern Belle on her way to a fancy, but underneath there's a shark. I mean, you've got a lot of elements there to play with.
Oh, absolutely. And it's very apparent in your paintings, too, because it's not just one, you know, feeling that, oh, this is a great car, so I'm going to do it. But you have so much more in behind it with each one you do, and you and it's right about you said about throw a car in a particular place and it says something, you know, and you have several of those in your series that I think are just wonderful paintings. And
absolutely.
Again, you know,
well,
and again,
you know, there's it says in the Bible, thou shalt not create a graven image. And they are graven images, but I try and imbue them, not always intentionally, I think it's just reflexive, with a bit of distance, so that you're looking at them and it's not the lens of nostalgia, although a few art critics have mistakenly laminated that adjective onto them. But it's about a distance from something almost unattainable, and the details aren't even there, so they become like dreamlike. I mean, I've never delineated a door on any of my car paintings, and I've made over 300 of them, you know. So yeah, it's a graven image, but it's something completely unattainable, and by the distance of it, it has self-contained within the parameters of its existence its negation. Make sense?
And yeah, absolutely. Like I was talking to Carl about that after I looked at some of your work. I didn't call it nostalgic. I called it more of a longing for this idyllic just peace.
Yes.
Because there's not a lot of peace in your paintings, but it's also not chaotic. But really the thing that struck me the most, more than your paintings even, was the sculpture work you've done. And most of it is of these just beautiful, like, 1940s model concept cars, kind of, you know when you look at it what it's kind of supposed to be, but it's like, but that can't really exist, but it's so beautiful, I want it to. Why doesn't this exist? I saw a lot of that. I was really impressed by your sculpture.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm hoping to get the budget together to get a whole bunch of my sculptures out of the foundry.
Ooh.
Well,
good. Wish I could help you there.
We could work on that. Absolutely.
With that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I brought them up about a year ago, and I left them there, and I haven't been in touch with anybody since because I got to cover a little bit of a gap there.
But well,
happens
you know,
to the best of us, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I said happens to the best of us.
Yeah. Oh, no question.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, of course, you've got the new book out. Again, and let's get the title of that again and who published it.
Oh, the title of the book is When Are You Coming Home? And it was published by Zeno Optic Press, St. Thomas University in Fredericton, New Brunswick. And I've made an arrangement so that within about a week or two, I should have a number of copies available through Battenkill Books. That's BATTENKILL, battenkillbooks.com. That's a bookstore nearby. I live in upstate New York, and the bookstore is in Cambridge, New York, and they handled my last book. People that know how to get in touch with me personally or through Facebook, I'll frequently give them instructions on, you know, how to get it from me. But through Battenkill Books, because they're within a close distance, I can go over there and sign the books as they go out. And they do the legwork, the mailing, and the pricing, and the charging of tax, et cetera, et cetera. I don't like to take care of those kind of details, and I'll sacrifice a lot of my end to them, so that they can have the opportunity of handling the book and the responsibility. Good God, I hate responsibility. So, you know.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So they'll take care of that for me. Connie, that store. And so I was by there, and boy, they responded so well to the book. You know, the book has only been out for a week. And so you're the first people I'm talking to about it. You got in there with a shoehorn, Carl. And
to be honest, Stephen, I've been trying to get you back for a couple of years. It's like, you got a new book out, Stephen. Come on.
Yeah, well, there it is. I'm fulfilling my obligations. Yeah, well, the response to the book has been phenomenal. What's that?
I said, I'm pretty sure Carl might have tried to use a crowbar if he had to.
Well, you know, I didn't feel it. I thought it was something else.
It's called the velvet crowbar, okay? You know, it's like, come on. You
a
know.
Floppy crowbar.
That's super kinky, buddy.
But the one thing I do want to ask also is you've got several of your paintings in museums and particularly galleries. Are there any upcoming gallery or showings now that COVID is starting to relax its grip?
Well, let's see. Right now, I have 9 car paintings up at Birdcliffe Klein Art Center in Woodstock, New York.
Okay.
A group show called The Power of Ten, curated by Jane Hart. And so that's in downtown Woodstock. It's right there on the main street.
Nice.
Tinker Street or something like that. So that just opened. I think that's up till the middle of June. Let's see, what else? In the Hamptons, in East Hampton, at a place called Aventura Motors, my old dealer Fred Dorfman of Dorfman Projects, he arranged for me to give that. It's a beautiful shop. They have very high-end vintage Ferraris and Aston Martins and Porsches and Jaguars, and they have a 15-pack of my car paintings. You know, the car paintings evolved in a whole bunch of different ways. The first thing, of course, was I had a client who had a bipolar son. And the client was very wealthy, and the son wanted a Ferrari, and the father said, you know what, my kid's too crazy for a Ferrari, and he contacted me, and he asked me to make a painting of a Ferrari. So I did, and the result was so good that I started a series of paintings, those proportions, which are 12 inches by 20 inches, and they're the same proportions as you'd see in the Robb Report or the DuPont Registry when they're advertising cars. So I started to do them, and every artist is a bit of a collector. So, you know, I was collecting my own paintings of cars and putting them up on the wall in grids and making them face in different ways and everything. And I realized that when you have a grid of like 15 cars on the wall, it's like having the remote in your hand and you're actually competing with the dynamic of television. It's like changing channels. You look at one painting and you like the color. You look at another painting, you like the shape. You look at another painting, you're identifying the car. Another painting, it's the landscape. And your eye is bouncing all over the place, which means you're being entertained and you're compelled. Now, lucky people that get to own a 9-pack. You know, I've never sold a 15-pack, but I've sold 5 9-packs. And that's, you know, pretty good. Those are lucky people that have, you know, get to have that experience where their eye just will never rest.
So do you ever do prints of your work that you sell to people, or is it always just originals?
Well, you know, I should do prints. But I'm such a solo act. I mean, right now I have a show coming up in a gallery in New London, Connecticut, slated for next March. But I haven't really been dealing with galleries in a while that would promote such a thing. You know, it's very strange. Galleries or the expense of production is so much that unless you can guarantee the sales, there's no point. And my work, I have a really strong following, but it's not a huge following. So I have a lot of collectors that have upwards of 10, 15 pieces, and I just sold 2 large paintings to a museum, Canada, the Winnipeg Art Gallery, and I guess they've announced that. That was very recent. So the ball is rolling, and, you know, if it happens, if somebody with an imagination and a market sense will do that, fine, I would make prints. I did one book of etchings, 18 etchings, a miniature box of etchings called Just Get Me Out of Here. The New York Public Library bought a copy. The Brooklyn Museum has a copy.
I'd be interested in a copy. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's great. It's beautifully done. And what else? Oh, and some of the car sculptures we did as an addition. Ralph Lauren got 2 of them. And then, of course, I walked into a Ralph Lauren store, and there were knockoffs of my sculptures, or I wouldn't say knockoffs of my sculptures. My sculptures were a certain dimension and a certain price. and he had bronze cars, same dimension, same price.
Yeah, but none of your
mine were done in
an
edition
work.
Of 10, and his were done in an edition of 500. Mine were done in Brooklyn, and his were done in Indonesia. So his profit margin
bitch.
Is much greater. Ah, please. You know?
Not you.
I did an imitation of Ronald Reagan in a wig with a hairdresser friend of mine, and 3 months later, Andy Warhol was wearing the wig in Vogue magazine, full page.
Yeah,
they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and it is amazing that so many people want to imitate what you're doing.
Well, I always say imitation is flatulence, but...
yeah, the money's a little better than imitation, just to say.
The money is better, yeah.
You know, but do you feel that you have that with all your paintings and that you've left a legacy, that this will show the world who Stephen Lack is, and that, because the one thing that I notice in everything that you do in the paintings of cars and your drawings, and we'll get to those in a second, your pen and pencil sketches, your everything shows a different side of you, and that's what intrigues me, because it's not just one thing, it's all this together that I feel really, really makes a statement, and I just wondered if you felt the same way.
I do, and that's why I say, when people say, you know, who do you follow in art, and of course we're talking about art on a radio show, so I might as well tell you, my hero in art is Ray Charles. And Ray didn't limit himself. He wanted to sing country and western, he sang country and western. He wanted to take church music and throw a little raunch into it, he did that. And and I later learned that the Ray Charles chorale was really Ray Charles. I thought it was somebody like Ray Conniff, you know?
It was Ray Charles. Absolutely, it was Ray Charles.
Absolutely, and a lot of music, elevator Muzak, was Ray Charles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so, you know, he had his finger in a lot of pies, and, and you know, his rule was, it's got to be entertaining. You know, people pay a price, and they come in, and they want to be entertained, and you got to put on a show. Well, you know, that show is also, like the word show implies, is a revealing of the artist. So Ray also didn't hold back on who he was. You heard him in all of that music, and each one was a different aspect. So you could triangulate or run an algorithm on it and get yourself a 3D printout. And I think the same thing is probable with the aggregation of all the work that I've done. Sure, why not? But each piece is its own organism as well, not just a puzzle piece to be assembled post-mortem, and also when you've lived a little bit, and I have, Homer Simpson, move over. I'm exhausted. I'm taking over this couch. But you know, when you've lived a bit, you know that so much ego and the desire for the accolades and the recognition and all of that, it's a little hollow, and it's not as satisfying as one would imagine. So you do it for the joy of doing it. You got to be there enjoying the moment, and all the rest of it is gravy. Gravy on your Harley seat.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I, being a musician, I specifically look at musicians, and my hero is Frank Zappa, for many of the same reasons that you say Ray Charles, because here was a man who infused his music with so many different styles and did it for himself and found an audience, you know, not trying to please the masses. And to me, he embodies a lot of what Ray Charles does to you. And certainly I can appreciate Ray Charles, too. I love him. You know,
right.
And of course, I used to collect vinyl back in the day. So I'd have so many, you know, 45s of Ray Charles and the early rhythm and blues people and so on and so forth and all the chess artists, you know, Muddy Waters.
Have you ever heard the album Listen by Ray Charles?
Oh, absolutely. In fact,
that
I sold it several times.
That,
you know,
that
when I was
amazing.
Selling vinyl. Absolutely.
Yeah. And another song that I really love, Dave Van Ronk doing the Song of the Wandering Angeus, I think it's called. That's an amazing song. It was on an album called No Dirty Names.
Yeah, that one I don't know.
Nobody knows it. It was a Verve. It's out on Verve. And I got it for $1.49 back in the day when albums were supposed to be, $3.50. And I ended up buying like two or three copies of it. I don't have any left.
I have a couple stories like that, too. Particularly Pink Floyd and the Pipers at the Gates of Dawn. But that's another story in another podcast.
Pink Floyd.
To finish up.
Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Finish up.
Oh, well, this is an anecdote for you.
Okay.
You'll love this. I guess, who directed it? It wasn't John Boorman, was it, that directed the movie?
No. It was Alan Parker.
Alan whatever. So I had been a disc jockey on a radio station, called myself Freddie the Pig. I may be a pig, but don't call me Freddie. And this was during the War Measures Act in Montreal, 1972. And my friend Greg Schifrin and another guy, Raghvendra Das, who works with Krishna Das, if you know KD's music. So they were running this station in Montreal that was owned by this radical hipster, Jeff Sterling, millionaire. And they were the maybe the second FM station in North America. The first FM station, when I say FM, I mean, you know, hipster stuff that was playing J. Giles blues band
and,
for like
an hour and a half without a break.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, so it was back in those days, and they brought me in to do some disc jockeying, which I loved, and I got a lot of free records out of it. Where was I going with that? But I was not keeping up with the current music. I liked Van Morrison, Ray Charles, Elvis, Dylan, and Leonard Cohen. That was it. Battle of the Bands and the Stones. So I wasn't really into Pink Floyd. I didn't really kind of ever listen to them for some reason. So years later, right, like, 1978, maybe 79, so Parker or whoever ended up directing the film asks or somebody arranges for us to get together. I'm under consideration for the lead in The Wall.
Wow, I did not know that.
Well, neither did I. I had never listened to Pink Floyd, and I never, I didn't know the album, and I didn't know anything about it, and the fact was they were going to do this thing, and it was going to be partial animation. I still haven't seen the movie either. And so we had a meeting, and we talked away for maybe an hour and a half. And then I get up to leave, and he says, this was the funniest thing, he said, I really enjoyed our time together. You know, the lead in the movie doesn't speak. So, unlike your typical actor who would go in there completely prepped, I'm not going to speak to this guy, I don't speak in the movie, so why should I speak to him now? No, I talked to him for an hour and a half, and he loved it, and then he said, okay, well, you're not getting the job, but I like talking to you.
I had no idea that happened. I've never heard that story before from you.
No, I've never told it before.
Wow. Thank you so much.
That. Here, you got another exclusive. You got the book and you got me and Alan Parker. That was it. Wasn't it?
Yeah, Alan Parker. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Steven. Is this, like, my bestest day ever?
Oh, my God.
It's a wonderful thing to have you on. We got to make more of a habit of it, because I think I really do mean this, and I wouldn't say this if I didn't mean it. You're one of the best guests we've ever had. You're just so entertaining and such a great guy to have on. And
was
really
I the biggest? Just kidding. Well, I appreciate it. You know, it's nice to have the. That's another cartoon I love doing. I couldn't believe I wrote that's on that 8 cartoons of the week. The one about the turtle and the shell. I guess they need it unless it's, what did I say? Not decorative. Anyway, never mind. I appreciate you knocking on my turtle shell and getting me to poke my head out.
Well, good. So... Before we go, and we're about ready to wrap up here, I just wanted to, again, just give us more information on the book and let people know to contact you on Facebook if they're looking for it. And
yeah, if they message me on Facebook, you know, I'll give them some information on how to get the book. We might have to wait until they print another... number of them. That only takes a week with the computers being what they are. But yeah, everybody's excited about this book. And, you know, I have some other interviews lined up or whatever, magazines. So, you know, we'll be doing it slowly because I don't have a book agent. So it's, you guys are lucky. You're talking to the source. Right there.
Absolutely. Well, we're always lucky to have you on. I really appreciate it. Okay, and for everyone...
I just want to remind people that... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to give this information. Oh, you go ahead.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. You can go to Battenkill, Battenkill books. .com, and apparently that is kind of an inside source to get this new book, which is called Coming Home.
Well, you know, and if they haven't got it up on their web page yet, you're just going to have to write it down, boys and girls, and check them out in about a week, because they should have some be able to, you know, parse it and post it and all of that and take orders, definitely.
Well, they do not have the new one, Are You Coming Home? They don't have that yet, but they do have AutoNation Exhibition Catalog, a signed copy,
yes.
And There Is a War, the drawings of Stephen Lack, also a signed
copy. Oh, yeah,
copy.
There Is a War, that's a great book.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. It's a great frickin' price on it, too.
Yeah, I know. We're going to have to change that. I'm going to have to do another printing. You know, these books are the closest thing to multiples I've got, and they really are, you know, for the people. I mean, I think the price of the book is ridiculously low, but what can you do? And I think they're signed. I think I signed them all.
Yeah, both of those are signed. Actually, AutoNation Exhibition Catalog is out of stock. I just saw that. But There is a War is still on the shelves now, and a signed copy even. And I just want to let everybody know that since Mr. Lack does not do prints of his work yet, you're going to have to buy two copies of the book, one to look at and one to, unfortunately, rip all of the pages out and frame.
Yeah, it'll,
like,
it's going to hold up. Yeah, that would be great.
Maybe put them over your TV. That might be a good idea.
Well, put it beside your TV and see who wins.
I was about to say, unfortunately, we can't do that, Carl. We still review movies and stuff, too. So.
That's true.
That's right. We don't want to kill any of the geese.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for being on.
Oh,
really,
you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
And thanks for paying attention.
Oh,
good talking to you.
General.
Well, yeah,
you know, I will have to say something. When we see your work, it screams to the Bureau, pay attention. Look at it. And that is something that's very special in visual arts. And you certainly have that, Stephen. No question.
Oh, yeah. Well, I used to get thrown out of school for it.
There you go.
Well,
I got thrown out of school, too.
Yeah.
You're definitely
okay, well, good talking to you, Rachel,
right,
Carl.
You
okay.
Too.
Thank you so much for being on, Stephen. We're going to go now into housekeeping and let people know what's going on Deviant Legion. Again, my greatest thanks, Stephen, for spending time with us tonight.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Okay. Bye, guys.
Okay. Bye. All right. So I think it's time for housekeeping. And we have a number of things going on. Okay. So we have a number of things going on. Tomorrow, why don't you tell us what's going on tomorrow, my dear?
Tomorrow is a show that is so close to my heart because I have been thinking about something like this for years, actually since before there was even a thing as podcasting. Tomorrow, we are going to be doing cover songs that are better than the original. And I just want to let you know, we are going diving way back, and we're even diving way forward. It is going to be just an absolute mindfuck of gloriousness. Bonus points, because there are a couple of songs that we'll be doing tomorrow that are artists covering their own songs that do it better than the original that they did. So I just want to say, it's going to be fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And on Thursday, we're going to have a special watch of a movie called The Dark Song. And I'll be doing that with Joe Badon and a couple other people are coming on. It's a religious film, a religious horror movie, but it's quite different than most things you've ever seen. It's an Irish film, and I think it's when it came out in 2017, it was my number two film of the year. I think it is a brilliant film, and we're going to be talking all about that. We're going to be doing that on Thursday. On Friday, we have a very special show. Adam will not be doing the show, but I will be on with author Joe Lansdale. And Joe has a new book coming out called Blood Moon, and we'll be talking about that. And he has a couple other projects coming in, and be really good to talk to Joe. On Saturday, we had scheduled to do this last week, but it didn't work. So we're doing it this Saturday, and we're going to be doing a commentary watch on 200 Motels by Frank Zappa. So that'll be a lot of fun. So that's what we have coming up this week. Anything else, Rachel, that I'm forgetting?
I don't think so currently. We do have some more shows in the works right now. We've got our fingers in a whole lot of pre-roll pots. So we've got some really amazing people
yet. That reminds me, I have to get in touch with Adam Scheffler today and see if we can schedule that show. Because he's awaiting
Hatchback
service. You know, but we do have some shows coming up, but until they're set up and we know that they're happening, we can't really say anything about them. But we're certainly busy this week, so please keep joining us, and we really appreciate you coming in. And again, I want to give my real thanks to Stephen Lack for spending time with us today. And that's what I got. So shall we say good night, my dear?
We shall say good night, my dear.
Okay. Good night, Irene. Good night. Or in this case, good night, Rachel. Good night.
Good night, Carl. Love your face. Bye.
Hey, love your face, too. All right, everyone. Have a good night. Thanks for joining us. We'll see ya on tomorrow for covers. All right. Talk to you soon.